The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 481. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight, I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How's it going?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Brett Murdoch.
What up, people?
Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
And Brian Majoma.
What's up?
All right, you guys, you're ready. You know, back with another one. Chris will be here. He was actually trying to get in here, but something happened. But he'll be on. You got to put the kid to sleep. You know how that goes. We're back with another Sunday show. We didn't get too many questions, so this episode might be short. We'll see what happens. So if you do have any more video game questions you want to ask us, drop them in the chat right now. I'll ask the question again after four questions. Let's get into it, man. We got Kishak here. Very controversial question, Richard. Get ready for this one. Do you guys take issue with so-called insiders, or who I like to call the Nostradamuses of gaming, who make hundreds of predictions with many of them being wrong, but if one is true, they are somehow redeemed? Okay, context here. Over the weekend, a certain individual who makes a lot of claims over at an Xbox-centric podcast is at it once again, you know? I don't remember what the fuck his dumb rumor was, but basically he said something that another quote-unquote insider shot it down, and it's like, oh, we got a war of insiders here. But it's like, both you guys have shoddy track records. Why are we trusting these people?
Why are they even considered insiders? Like, if they were insider, there was somebody who actually was from Xbox saying some shit.
Yeah, so this is my theory. They got something right one time, and it probably was just, it was just dumb, a wild guess. They got it right, kind of close to right, and people are like, oh shit, he was right about that. And then since the, you know, leaks that they always have are so salacious, but this is the same source that said Starfield is coming to PS5. That didn't end up happening, as we saw, you know. So he got something right a while ago. So people are like, oh, look at all this. Look, he got that right. It's like, yeah, but what about the other nine things he got wrong, man? What about those? You know? So
we've gotten things right. Are we insiders?
Well, here's the thing. We have a better track record than these people, and we don't consider ourselves insiders. We just have really good deductive reasoning, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, based on the current way of things of going, the way these companies seem to work, we make an educated guess.
Yeah, but these guys aren't doing
it. Is.
But these guys aren't. They're claiming my sources say this. Yeah.
Yeah, what they're saying is, yeah, they're saying their sources say this or that, and there's really nothing to it. You know, here's the one thing.
Oh, by the way, here's the inside scoop that Helldivers 2 is coming to Xbox. Okay, bro. Anyway, go on.
Well, I mean, to be honest, like, why would they put it on Xbox?
Well, because right now it's just a PC and PlayStation 5 exclusive. But here's the thing: this is one of these, you know, leaks that could come true, and then you know what'll happen. I was right. It's like,
but I mean, I asked the question: why put it on Xbox, especially if the sales are happening on two platforms that are, you know, that pay for their games?
More sales?
Yeah, more sales, yeah.
What sales? What sales are they going to get? They can't even sell their own friggin' first-party titles on their own console.
Yes, we're going to talk about later.
So what sales are they going to be getting? I mean, I would say, like, if unless Helldivers has some sort of, you know, maybe they did a free, do some sort of other additional deal to get people to go, but I don't know. Like, I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, as far as the prediction goes, I mean, it's like, yeah, you can say a bunch of different things, and a lot of these people say a bunch of different things, and they get one or two things, you know, right. You know, they're just essentially throwing shit at a wall and seeing what sticks. And that's all a lot of that stuff is. But rather than say, okay, this is an educated guess, they'll say, oh, insider talk. The other thing about insider talk.
By the way, the insider in question is a podcaster, just throwing that out there.
Let's say you did hear something from, during a conversation with so-and-so from Xbox, right? They say a lot of things. There could be a lot of things that they have that they are looking into. Just because they might be looking into doesn't exactly mean that they're going to. There's a lot of things behind the scenes you'll like hear of, like, oh, you know, you'll hear about later on. Oh, hey, what? Disney at one point wanted to buy DC Comics. You know, you hear all kinds of crazy stuff like that. But these are things that are just thrown around in the background as possibilities. They're not actually true.
Yeah. By the way, shout out to Chris Seeley joining us.
What up?
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, people throw shit at the wall 100 times, one sticks, and now they somehow have credibility.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen, how many times have we seen a rumor going around by credible sources, people who are the same people who are touted online, and they, you know, we can do the same thing. And it's like, oh, you know, The Last of Us 3 is going to be on Xbox, you know? It's like, well, no one's going to remember 10 years from now when it doesn't happen. But if it ever does happen, we're going to be like, you see, we called it.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, you know? I'll go ahead, Rich.
Let me just respond to what Carlos just said. No chance in hell, Jack. No way in hell that's coming to Xbox. But I understand what you're saying. Yes, continue.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where people want credibility and they want to be regarded as like somehow esteemed and gain Twitter followers and stuff. And that's just what they do. They, you know, they get invited to podcasts around the internet and spew out random stuff. And if it doesn't happen, well, they threw like 1,000 things. So it's not like you can pinpoint one thing or their claim to fame to something. So when something does hit, then they'll brag about it like they actually did something.
Yeah. And again, this is one of those instances where this could conceivably come true. And if it does, then they'll be like, oh, see, we were right. We were right. You know, it's all fucking, this is clout chasing at the end of the day, man.
That's why, yeah, it's exactly that. And then I even talked about this, I think it was like a couple of weeks ago when Jeff Grubb was in one of the Kind of Funny podcasts. I forgot what the hell he mentioned was going to happen. And then even after he, I forgot what prediction it was. I think it was Gears or something. Gears 6 announcement in the summer. And it's like, well, you know, Xbox has to have a game announced in the summer. What's one game that hasn't been announced in a long time? That's people are anticipating that, you know, is in development. Oh, maybe Gear 6. So he throws out Gear 6 in the X-Cast and even does the whole thing. It's like, well, people are going to get mad at me online anyways. And he hedges his bet. If he's a true insider, you got to have conviction. And you got to trust your sources and you got to know what the hell you're going to do. Because if you don't trust your sources, then why the hell are you throwing it out? You're just throwing shit just to throw shit. And it's the same thing. Same thing, you know, like it's like hedging your bets to not get any blowback if something that you said doesn't come true.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's ridiculous, man.
Real quick. So again, I don't want to say the name of the podcast here. I don't want to give them any air, but the podcast says there are preliminary talks to bring Helldivers 2 to Xbox consoles. So then I see somebody getting. The podcast says there are preliminary talks to bring Mario Kart 8 Deluxe to PlayStation 5 consoles as a joke. You know, it's like, this is how stupid this shit is, man. You know, but again, people are, that's all I saw this weekend. You know, oh shit, it's coming, you know, and then of course, obviously the Xbox says, hey, you guys ain't going to have that exclusive. It's like, you realize this is unsubstantiated, right? It's like, what the fuck, man?
It's like getting like Microsoft's getting all of these games on PlayStation, like Grounded and Hi-Fi Rush. And it's like saying, oh, well, Elder Scrolls 6 is going to be on PlayStation. And just throwing shit at it. Like, if no one's going to say it's not. And the game's too far away for it to be, like, held against the person because people are going to forget. But when we get to the point and it doesn't happen, people will forget. But if it does happen, the motherfucker's going to remind you.
Yeah. I mean, only kind of, though. Like, I'm glad that you kind of brought that up because, like, kind of people forget, but, like, giving a platform to this kind of bullshit is part of the reason that the reputation of games journalism is where it is. Like, people just make up shit because it sounds the most, you know, headline-grabbing, like, I don't know, Last of Us 2 on Xbox. That's a thing I'm going to say because enough people are afraid of it happening that it would gather traction and people it would incite discussion. And the internet isn't even about good and bad anymore. It's about discussion, which means successful trolling. Like, it's just, we live in an age of post-apocalyptic stupidity where all that matters is that people are talking. And so some asshole says the most inflammatory thing that they can, and then another asshole gives them a platform to shout it. And then when it never manifests, people are like, oh, well, I mean, I guess it's nobody's fault. But, like, the consumers remember. They do. Like, and I think that's, I mean, honestly, that's the reason that we're here. It's the reason this whole thing started is like we know that you guys are not this fucking stupid. We know that we give you the credit of, like, we don't always agree with all of you, but, like, we know that you're not stupid. You're not idiots. You're not falling for this shit. You remember, and that's why you're here, too, because you're sick of the bullshit that other games journalist sites have given you because you recognize it as just fucking fodder. Yeah. So, like, it's not that people don't recognize it. It's that enough people don't recognize it, and there's entire systems that are built around it that are wildly profitable. So even, honestly, if nobody liked it, it would be an uphill battle to get it to change.
Yeah, it's not going to change. And the gaming community thrives on this shit. Well, actually, both of them do. The gaming industry and the gaming community thrive on this shit. They thrive on rumors and speculation and all this nonsense. That's why guys like this, you know, get a platform, even though they're wrong like 90% of the time. And that 10% when they are right is suspect as fuck, you know? So... But is this what happens when we don't have games to discuss and we just talk about all this other nonsense instead? This is eating up more bandwidth, and this happens all the time. You know, I feel like I tweet that shit out every 3 months. Like, why are we giving air to these insiders? You know, every fucking time. It's infuriating, man.
They shouldn't be called insiders, though.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. They're not even fucking insiders. They're wrong. You know, go ahead, Brad. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just curious, like, in any other industry, we wouldn't call them insiders. And I'm sitting here racking my brain with, like, would we call them analysts? Would we call them journalists? Like, what would you call somebody who
grifters? That's what I would call them, you know?
What's that?
Grifters.
Well, yeah, I know that. But, like, if this is the tech industry and somebody who has no, like, no ties to Apple whatsoever, they're talking about Apple rumors, like, at the very best, you can dress it up, say they're an analyst. They've analyzed the industry, and this is their prediction. Like, that's the best thing you could possibly call them, right?
In tech, they're either called leakers or tipsters. In gaming, they're called insiders.
But leakers and tipsters isn't right either, because they don't actually know that information. They're just fucking guessing.
Yeah, even though with tech, a lot of the tipsters and leakers, you know, the big guys, they're usually right because, you know, the tech has a very hard time keeping shit under wraps, you know? Like, every time there's a Samsung leak, usually, like, 99% of the time, it turns out to be real, you know?
Yeah, okay.
But with gaming, it's just people throwing shit out there and seeing what sticks. And people, and the gaming community loves this shit. They love discussing this stuff, you know? It's upsetting, man.
I think it's okay and I love that the gaming community loves talking about this stuff. I mean, honestly, it's like saying, like, comic book nerds love talking about who would win in a fight. Like, I think it's great for us to talk about it.
No, but based off what these grifters are saying, Brett, that's my problem. And that's
the thing, like, to talk about the possibility of something happening, cool, but, like, to put any credence in what these people are saying other than a launch point for a discussion about, like, well, would that be good or bad? Like, how do we feel about it? Like, I'll be honest. I think that a lot of the discussions that go on the gaming sphere, they need better language. But I mean, I almost to an ironic point, like, they make sense. A lot of the things discussed are like consumer rights and personal liability and things like that. They're just put under the most toxic of names and said in the worst of ways. But I think the core of a lot of the things that, you know, they talk about are important. And I don't think anybody in a lot of those discussions is going, I 100% believe this guy. And I could be entirely wrong because I stayed the fuck off Twitter. But, you know, people kind of more, you know what, I'm probably right. As I'm saying, I'm like, no, of course people do take this to be gospel.
And they do.
They do it accordingly.
Inevitably, they use it as ammo.
Yeah.
Gaming discourse is such shit, man.
It really is. Like, it's fine when you keep it to hypothetical. It's fine when you keep it to wants and needs and shoulds. It's just when you get to this other shit, like, it's just, oh, man, it's bad. It gets so trashy.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, if it was the way you described it, it's like, hey, what would happen if Helldivers 2 came to Xbox and people just had a fun comic book-like discussion? Cool. That's not what happens, though. That's the problem, you know?
Well, I mean, even under the context of, like, oh, Helldivers could come to Xbox, like, that's a really shitty way to try and have that same discussion, but it is saying the same thing, I feel like.
Yeah.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, but, like, when people then take that and use it for ammo, that's just, man, it's, don't argue strongly about things that you don't understand and conjecture and guesses are in that alley.
The thing about it is that the biggest problem with a lot of this is because it's a solid statement, and solid statements get attention, right? They're going to do this, or this is going to happen. Stuff like rhetoric like that gets people to click, and that's what they're looking for. It doesn't matter if it's the truth; they're just looking to get that influx of interest.
Yep, it's crazy. All right, any other thoughts on this whole insider nonsense?
We should just call them influencer nonsense because that's all it is.
Again, this is coming from a podcast. Yeah. It's like, okay, guys.
There's nothing insider. An insider is actually somebody. An insider would be like somebody like me who actually works in the fucking game industry. That would be an insider.
Yeah. Right? The only thing these assholes are inside is their own ass.
Yes.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
All right, man.
An insider would be if somebody who actually works in the industry literally walked out of PlayStation and jumped onto a podcast and said something. That is an insider. You know, guessimos or whatever the fuck you want to call these guys. That's all they're doing. They're just bumping the, you know, again, throwing shit at a wall and seeing what sticks and seeing what gets them as much attention as possible. And I don't know why the fuck. A place like Kinda Funny likes to have guys like that idiot on their show.
Oh, man. I want to go to this next one because it's related from Mr. J. Shep. This is more of a statement instead of a question, but I wish gaming companies could sue these annoying ass quote unquote insiders. Most of the time, they either leak info that could hurt companies and spoil it for players or throw shit against the wall to see what sticks with no accountability whatsoever. Here's the thing. They could only bring action against them if they sign some kind of contract or an NDA, right? Because that's the other side of quote-unquote leakers, right, that I want to discuss. The guys who are not leaking anything at all, they're just breaking fucking embargoes, right? And the problem with gaming is, and I've discussed this on the podcast before, a lot of the, you know, when you, it's the digital equivalent of a handshake that you will not talk about this stuff. It's very rare when I have to actually sign a document. And I'm like, I think it should be standard. Everybody has to sign a fucking document, you know?
Just like anybody in the gaming industry has to sign a non-disclosure agreement, right?
No, but that's my problem. Most NDAs are just virtual handshakes. They're not actually signed. No, but I think that's a problem.
Every single person in the game industry, as a person who works in it, signs a non-disclosure agreement.
Oh, the higher ups. I'm talking about the journalists. And I'm talking about the journalists.
No, I'm talking about not higher ups, not anybody. Everybody who works at a game studio has to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
That's what I mean. Higher than journalists, Manny. That's what I'm talking about.
They cannot. Yeah, they cannot talk about it. The journalist should be held accountable on that same level.
Yes.
As soon as they get that piece of information, they have to sign a non-disclosure agreement, and they can only reveal that stuff. And this goes for every single one of those people. This goes even YouTube people. As soon as if they break that embargo, they have the right to do whatever the hell they want in that side in that agreement.
Yeah.
What I want to say?
Go ahead. Chris first, and then Brett.
Yeah. Sorry, I was late before.
You're good.
But, like Manny said, I remember that the NDA that Rockstar made you sign was, like, ridiculous. I spent half a day on my first day just filling out paperwork for them.
Oh, shit.
And it's very punitive, like, if you leak stuff. Like, if you plan to leak something out of there on Nintendo, you better, be like James Bond and trying to get that shit out of there, because they will punish you severely. I agree that maybe journalists should have to sign a much harsher non-disclosure agreement, because all it is like, oh, you lose access. Yeah, but you're already damaged from the leak. You possibly have employee information leaking or whatever, and the only retribution is like, oh, well, we're not giving you games anymore. Like, that's but if you are an actual insider, like, man, if you leak stuff, you get in serious trouble, and you could face civil action and all this stuff. You know, you lose your job.
Exactly. It's all in the contracts that you sign. And again, those a journalist should be held accountable, especially if it's known that they're going to be leaking things, right? Or any of those YouTubers, right?
Yeah. Brett, what did you want to say?
I want to see a website that uses kind of metadata to track that, so you can actually pick out some of these quote unquote insiders and their percentage record for actual, like how accurate they actually are. And you look up some of these people, like, oh, this asshole's only right 4% of the time.
Yeah, exactly. That would be great. But yeah, I wish that kind of accountability came up to the journalist end. Because again, let's just say, for example, I like get 20 game codes in a year, right? I don't think I'll maybe sign one NDA. And that's usually not what happens either. It's probably more like I sign an NDA out of like 100 games or 200 games. It's usually, hey, we have a review code. Do you agree to embargo? Yes, I agree. And that's it. And like Chris said, the only penalty is that you lose access, right? You don't get like sued or something. I think every single journalist should be like held accountable. Sign this shit. You know, it's crazy.
But the ones that are breaking these embargoes, who are they the most of? People who aren't held by what is considered journalistic integrity, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that are leaking these things. Who's the guy making that Twitter account that all of a sudden is saying all this stuff is happening? That wasn't a journalist that did it. It was some dumbass YouTuber, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or influencer.
Yeah. Although there are some cases, I'm not going to name names, where the journalist breaking embargoes is so big that companies just have to deal with it because they don't want to lose access to their audience, which is infuriating. It's like, okay, so because that asshole's big, he gets to not play by the rules, really? One guy last week who broke fucking embargo on Stellar Blade. You weren't supposed to tell that shit on that date, dude. You went ahead and did it because you're not going to lose access to shit. That pissed me the fuck off,
especially with people us at STV and Play, obviously, we'll also Richard on the coalition. Like, Richard has worked long and hard to get into the good graces with these companies, and to just have that all dashed to pieces because some fucker decided they wanted to get the scoop.
to scoop my ass. You broke embargo. You didn't scoop nothing, man. I can talk about this now. Again, I'm not getting any names, but you guys know exactly. You know who exactly I'm talking about. The day that journalists started getting review codes, the same day me and Rich got review codes, we were told when we could tell people we got the game, or when we could say, hey, we got the game, and when the embargo lifts, right? Literally an hour after that, this one guy goes on there, this insider, literally in the name of the website, by the way, you know, this gaming website with the name Insider on it. This guy goes, oh yeah, they could talk about it on the 17th and the embargo lifts on the 24th. I DM Rich. I'm like, Rich, are you seeing this shit? This motherfucker broke embargo. You know, nothing happened to him. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, like me and Rich, we play ball. We have been doing it for over a decade. We don't break fucking embargoes. Then we see this shit happen. You know, every fucking time, man. Yeah, Rich, what are your thoughts on these fucking assholes, man? Now I'm pissed.
I'm mad. I agree 100%. It is very aggravating to see people breaking embargo. I just want to say, hopefully Harry and the Hendersons get themselves together. I'm tired of seeing, you know, there are too many people that do this. And, you know, I'm pretty sure there will be more embargoes broken in the future.
Mm-hmm.
As always. But yeah, it is ridiculous to see people get away with this, and then they're still granted the same opportunities as the people who actually do stick to the embargoes. It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, so there's that side of it. Those guys, you know, it's like, oh, look at their track record, because they're breaking fucking embargoes. That's why, you know? But yeah, I agree that there should be penalties, man. Sign NDAs, penalties if you break embargo. Fuck that shit, you know? All right, moving on here. Less contentious stuff now, I guess. But it could still rile up some people. Another question from Mr. J. Shep. With the console wars now over and many Xbox gamers moving to PC, are we entering the publisher wars era? Interesting question. I know some people would not like you saying that the console wars are over, but I would maintain they've been over for over a decade. That's what I maintain. I don't think Xbox has brought any real competition to PlayStation for ever since the Xbox One released, you know? So I agree with you on that, J-Shep. But Rich, what are your thoughts on this? Are we now looking into publisher wars instead?
Well, first and foremost, I was going to say, yeah, I also agree that there is no console war. But yes, very dangerous territory to say that out loud, because there are a lot of people loud and vocal on social media that want there to be a war, when Microsoft has already conceded a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Phil Spencer told us, we're not in competition with Sony. He said that a long time ago.
Yep.
And people have selective hearing on whenever he says something. So, but to answer the question, publisher war, sure. I mean, my question would be is, what is an example of some companies that you think will be going against each other? You saying like, I don't know, EA, Take-Two, so on and so forth?
That's what it seems like to me. That's how I'm taking the question. It's like, so publishers will be like Ubisoft, EA, Square Enix, Capcom, mm-hmm. you know? So I guess that's what he's getting at here. Even though we've...
Yeah,
go ahead, Carlos.
I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. I think PlayStation might look at Tencent as more of a competitor than Xbox is.
I agree.
At the current moment. So, you know, it's about having as much software available and selling as much within services and all that. Xbox is, you know, is bringing up their whole thing with their acquisition. So they might be a sleeping giant. But at the current time, Tencent and Sony are the two biggest publishers in the world. So I feel like those are the more of the competitions that I feel like they're going through. And I feel like Jay Shep mentioned, it's more of a publisher thing than it is a console thing. The console thing is just a means to get your video game sales and sell your microtransactions and your subscription services. So, you know, console sales at the end of the day, even if you outsell your console by a million consoles, it doesn't really tell much of the story.
Yeah, Jay Shep says, I've seen on Twitter people bragging that Xbox games are selling better on PlayStation. We have a question about that. So we'll get to it soon. But yeah, I think... Yeah, like, go ahead. Whoever was talking. I guess not. But Rich, I agree with you. It's like Phil Spencer already said it. He said it's over. Like, he's the head of Xbox saying this. What are we discussing here? What are we arguing? Console wars are over. PlayStation 1, you know? Now we've moved on to something else. I call it the post-console war era, you know? Kind of like the post-Cold War era. Now we have the post-console war era. Now we're fighting with subscriptions and all this other stuff, you know? And yeah, like Carlos said, Microsoft could come up. As we're already seeing their games doing very well on other platforms, you know? So
I kind of feel like console war is kind of like when people kind of try to be like, oh, it's a new Gamergate. Like, bro, the console wars happened before the console wars happened before you were born. The console wars were between Genesis and Nintendo, and I'll tell you who won that. Sony. When Nintendo didn't take the disc drive and it birthed the Goliath that murdered them all. It's a classic Greek tragedy. And a tale of folly and hubris. But and that was the end of the console wars. Sony won them. Then a new thing happened, and Microsoft fumbled that. And now we're even in a thing beyond that. So we're several ages beyond that. Several collapses. So we're just so far removed from what was actually the console war. And now we're in more, the platform wars.
Yeah. Publisher wars, yeah, it's different now. Obviously, I agree with that.
I mean, you can't even call it the publisher wars because Microsoft straight up buying publishers.
Yeah, we're definitely in a post console. You know, because for a while there was a console war between PlayStation and Xbox. You know, PS3 and Xbox. Xbox One was winning that one. Then PS3 kind of came up at the back end. But as soon as the Xbox One dropped, this shit is over. It wasn't Sony that delivered a killing blow. It was Microsoft that killed itself. You know, that's the crazy part. Killed itself before the race even started. You know.
Yep.
So I agree with you. Yeah, the real console war was fought back in the early 90s, you know, and that was pretty decisive. And I like that answer, Brett. It's like, who won the console war between Sega and Nintendo? Sony. They really did. They really did, man. It's crazy. All right.
None of us were expecting it either. So, what it is.
Yeah. All right. Let's move it on here. Another one from Mr. J. Shep. If I'm not mistaken, the Throwdown panel believes the Nintendo Super Switch 2 will have PS4 type capabilities as far as graphics and power and graphics. Before I move on, do we all agree on that? That'll be comparable to PS4 in terms of power.
Yeah,
They're always one generation behind.
Yeah.
So yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I agree.
Okay.
I agree. They'll catch up to that level of power.
Probably. Okay.
Yeah. Their previous one. Was equivalent to a PlayStation 3 or
the Switch is PlayStation 3 ish. Yeah,
it's like PlayStation 3 era, maybe a little bit better.
In that realm.
Yeah,
that's about it.
But yeah, but basically, I just wanted to establish yes, we all agree on that. And then the main question here is if that's the case, what older third party bangers could receive a port? Is there any chance of seeing Elden Ring on the Switch 2?
Oh man, they're gonna prove Tony wrong.
Yeah, they're gonna have GTA 5.
GTA 5 on there.
Even though I'll still be right because I never said the Switch 2, I said the Switch, you know. But you're right. But you know some motherfucker come out of the woodwork because he told you were wrong. You were wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. Where were you pulling up old tweets?
You want to see what will be coming to the Switch 2? Pull up a Steam page of the bestsellers. Indie title.
I'm sorry, Brad. No, you're right. It's like, look at the Steam bestsellers. You're right, because that's what happened with the Switch, you know? Rich, you'll like this one. J-Shep goes, Switch 2 now is entering grown man gaming. man.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Mario, you don't want Mario in 1080p? Because you know it ain't going to be no 4K, you know? Fucking Nintendo. Oh,
no. It's going to be 1080p. No, a solid 1080p. Maybe if they have an upscaler, but maybe. maybe if there's if they have some sort of upscaler, but I mean the idea would be the upscaler would be attached to their whatever their dock, but even their dock, I think their dock is going to be exactly the same as the previous one. It's just going to be a video out, and yeah, it's just going to now it's going to run at 1080p. You know, they're going to be running at 1080p across the board as opposed to 720 on the thing, the handheld now.
Yeah, that's what I think is going to happen. So yeah, but going back to your specific question about Elden Ring, I don't think so. Not because of graphics. I think more because of the online component. I don't think Nintendo really has that nailed down yet. You know, I could be wrong about that. I don't know how their online games are, but are they like as stable as like they are on like real consoles? Like how does that work? I could be very ignorant about this. So please.
The four runs Elden Ring decently.
No. I'm talking about Switch. How it's like connectivity and all that.
I mean, their online
cloud stuff is terrible.
Yeah.
That's what I'm asking
did
about.
Did you try out Resident Evil Village on there? That was unplayable. It was molasses. But their games work okay, like Smash Brothers. And Smash Brothers is like hit or miss. Mario Kart works well. But it's usually their games, and it's usually Mario Kart that works well. I don't know about like any fighting games. I mean, maybe somebody else knows.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we have any like evidence of how well third-party multiplayer games work on Switch? So I don't want to make a blanket statement. I honestly don't know.
I don't know. Again, we don't.
None of us play Switch like that on this panel. So
yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean the you know maybe Brett like 5 years ago. Maybe we could ask him. You know, but
Brett, ask yourself five years ago, bro.
Did you play you didn't play any online games on Switch when you were, you know, smitten, you know?
I mean, it's pretty garbage system. I want to be inclined to be like,
tell me how you really feel
play online, but like, and I'm sure somebody will prove me wrong, but like, it's pretty garbage indeed. Notoriously garbage, one might say.
I did play Mario Kart 8 and Smash Brothers online. I mean, you're still dealing with friend codes.
Oh my god!
So you know, we still got to go through that hurdle.
What about third party games, Carlos? Do you have any experience with that? That's my main question. It's like, how well do the third party multiplayer games work if they have any? Again, I could be completely showing my ignorance right here because I honestly don't know.
Yeah, no.
We could throw it to the chat. There's a couple of Nintendo heads out in the chat.
The problem is Blitz isn't on tonight.
What?
You know, would have been able to answer that shit.
Hey, Blitz, if you're listening to us, you know, or watching us, you know, in the future, you know, chime in on the Discord and tell us what you what your experience on the Switch is. You know, because we're a little bit shorthanded because I think a lot of us own Switches but don't play the online games on there.
Yeah. Well, Blitz, if he's not here right now, he's going to listen to us tomorrow at work. So he'll let us know in the Discord. The question is how well do third-party multiplayer games work on Switch? Like Fortnite, how well does Fortnite work on Switch? You know? Monster Hunter, that's also on Switch. How well does that work? Right?
Yeah, Monster Hunter Rise, right?
Yeah, Rise.
I mean, I've heard, you know, people have had decent experiences on there, but again, I can't really confirm it on my own.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, Switch 2 can get Monster Hunter World.
It could, right? You know, it could, yeah. Graphics are still going on Drunken Guardians. I haven't seen in a while, man. Graphics aren't as great, and frame rate could drop sometimes. You're talking about just Switch games in general, right? Fucking bullshit system. All right, moving on here. Mob Hits.
Back in the day, man. Like a console that's like PS3 strength. I mean, as a handheld, that wasn't a bad thing.
No, it wouldn't have been. But the problem is that system came out when we had better hardware out there. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
I think the biggest, like, here, I feel like if let's say you know, for the sake of conversation, just, you know, because we're kind of running out of. Oh, we got a little.
No, we still time, got. Yeah, we're still. Yeah, we still got time, baby. We still got.
One thing I would say: What if the Switch wasn't playing the game of like, oh, we're a console and we're just a handheld, but that's as strong as a, you know, as PlayStation 3 in that sort of era. Like there was no connecting to televisions involved. Would you feel as strongly about it?
Wait, you mean when it debuted?
Yeah, no, when I'm saying in general, like let's say.
Oh,
like,
no, because Steam Deck exists. No.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, at the time. Like,
okay, so, you, at so, the time, so it was saying, when it debuted then. That's why I asked you that specifically. I mean, because it is, yeah, like objectively, it is impressive getting that kind of power, PS3 power on a handheld. So yes, in a bubble, yes, that is impressive. But like I said, there's other systems out there, you know? Mm-hmm. So why would I limit myself to that when there's better stuff I could play? But yes, on its own, it's fine. But as we discussed even back then, even the Switch when it came out was still like held behind because they didn't use the latest like Tegra chip and shit, which it could have. They just didn't. You know?
Yeah. Tony.
Yeah.
You say it's impressive, but you review hardware.
Yeah.
How many companies have been able to do that or better? Because it feels like everyone.
What do you mean?
I mean, you've seen the rash of Steam Deck clones being released by every hardware developer or manufacturer that's out there, right?
Yeah. Yes, I've reviewed many of them, yes.
Yeah, okay, so you say Switch is impressive.
No. Wait, go back. Remember the caveat. Manny asked, would I have found the Switch impressive in 2017? That's the question. I'm not talking about
because,
it now.
Because you know? In 2017, we didn't have anything like as far as a handheld that was on par with even a PlayStation 3 or an Xbox at that point in time.
Yeah, and Brett, that's why I was very specific. I'm like, that's why I said at the time, because now, fuck no. We got the Steam Deck, you know?
I don't think you found impressive then, even when it launched.
No, you're right. Back then, even then, even back then, it was not, you know, it wasn't because it was already not even the latest hardware. So I do agree with you on that, you know? Even back then, you know? Yeah. All right. Just because there's so many caveats, because that's a hypothetical question. But yeah, again, we have the Steam Deck.
But
so
I feel like
makes
I
the think, Switch irrelevant.
I think in general, and like looking back at that time, like I did find that part of it impressive. That again, though, we had the only other like handheld game console that was providing, you know, close to that PlayStation 3, Xbox 360 stuff was the PlayStation Vita. And obviously the Vita wasn't able to, you know, pull across because they were stupid. Now, it's like that on that side, I'm like that on that end, I think it was pretty impressive for the time as far as, you know, Nintendo hardware goes. But even then, as we said then, it was still, you know, behind the times. It was already a generation or two behind already. Yeah.
Pretty much. All right. So, again, if you guys want to ask us any more questions, leave them in here in the chat, either on Twitch or YouTube, and we'll throw them in. But so far, the way things are going, there's going to be a good, healthy show. So we're doing all right, you know? All right. Let's move over to Mob Hits here. And let me finish this question before you guys jump in, because I know someone's going to go, hold on a second. You know, even myself, like, hold on, bro. He goes, ISPs are reportedly considering charging extra for gaming and streaming. If this happens, how would this affect cloud gaming services and the number of multiplayer games released? My thing is, like, wasn't this a threat like a bunch of years ago? Like, are they trying to bring that back now?
Yeah, this sounds familiar.
Yeah, this sounds very familiar. I'm I know we discussed this on the podcast before.
Oh, net neutrality?
Net neutrality.
So I'm like, are they trying to do this again?
Well, no.
Well, I guess it's from the corporate side.
Yeah.
They're going to toll off the internet. Like, if you're not just browsing the web or checking email, watching streaming. I mean, even then, like, once you open that door, then it'll be like, oh, you watch a lot of Netflix or whatever. Yeah. Well, we're going to charge you this much. You got to buy the streaming tier of internet. Now you got to buy the gaming tier of internet. That's not good.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, how would that affect that would be bad for fucking gaming, because like most of it is so dependent on online, you know. It would be bad for the gamers, I should say, you know. Might be good for the companies. But again, I don't know if this is like a new thing. Because again, I know for a fact we discussed this back in the day on Throwdown, you know.
Yeah, like Chris said, it was part of the net neutrality conversation, mm-hmm. where in other words, you know, you can't just randomly start charging people for, you know, for different type, you know, for piecemeal, right?
Yeah.
But now, obviously, they can, because a certain idiot who was a part of the FCC ended that, didn't he?
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, this can happen. I mean, I know I've heard that some ISPs even throttle people who are using VPNs. So,
oh, shit.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if any of this happens. But we'll see. Because I will say this, with as time goes by, more and more ISPs don't have to rely on freaking copper wires to get to transmit their signals to people. You know, getting more and more into, you know, fiber connections almost all the way to the end user. So, you know, in terms of bandwidth, I think things are getting a lot better than they used to.
Yeah.
But you never know. I mean, if they want to make a buck, they can always do this. So I wouldn't put it past them.
Yo, man, where the gaming lobbyists at? You know? But yeah, I don't know. Drunken Guardian says, still mad I can't get fiber out here. Where you at, bro? Where you at? All right. Another one here. Oh, hold on a second. Actually, I've got to combine two questions, but I'll save that for later. Wait, do I have to combine? No, I don't. Never mind. Another one from Mob Hits. Why are Microsoft games selling well on PlayStation? Very blunt.
You want to know why? Uh-huh. Yeah. You want to know why? Because they're not selling. They're not actually selling on the platform they were created for, because they have a service and people opt into the service instead of buying the game.
Yep. I mean,
How much is that service every month? $16, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
$16. So that means, and on a PlayStation, how much are they making for when you sell a version of Hi-Fi Rush? Hi-Fi Rush is also considered a budget title. What, $50?
Something like that. So yeah, so you're basically saying like they're that? Selling well because people have to buy the actual games instead of just
because buying you have a service. To actually buy the damn thing. That's it.
Selling well and in Microsoft,
what context? And Microsoft knew this.
Yeah, go ahead, O'Brien.
Selling well in what context? In that A? No, because I feel like there's like two ways that you can frame selling well. It could be that they're selling well in general, i.e. implying that on Xbox they did not sell well, or they're selling well on the PlayStation, and why is it that it's selling on a PlayStation, even though PlayStation is meant to have other games
in that context. Brian, I think it's that one, because on the Thursday show, one of the things we talked about is how, like, out of the 20 games, the best sellers on PlayStation currently, most of them are Microsoft-developed games, and there's only, like, a handful of PlayStation or Sony-developed ones. So I think that's the context of the question he's asking here. He asked, why are Microsoft's games selling better than PlayStation's? Well, like, because Microsoft has more publishers under its belt. That's why.
They actually do have more publishers, and the fact that they're all games that were all previous games that were not Microsoft games beforehand. Can you even count those?
They count them. They technically count now.
They technically count now, but at the same time, it's a stacked answer.
Yes,
you know what I mean, because they already have these studios that are already made established franchises and games and already that are already been sitting in the stores already. We get a little bit of a bump up because, okay, you know, obviously people can't not go a day without buying a Call of Duty game, you know, so that's already a given. That people are going to be buying that if they're on a PlayStation, they're going to be buying it on a PlayStation. What was it? Fallout just had a show that got out into the zeitgeist and everybody started getting interest in Fallout again. So there's that.
Yeah, a bunch of Fallout games are selling well on PlayStation right now, and they're technically not Microsoft games.
They're technically Microsoft games. So, I mean, I would say this. I don't consider, like, the one, and, like, I, you know, obviously the real answer is yes, those are all Microsoft games, but I don't consider anything up to the point that that Hi-Fi Rush or any of those games that didn't exist before came out. I don't consider those anything that's already been sitting in a store about Microsoft title, because I feel like those are not indicative of the, you know, of what is currently happening, because they're already been there.
Yeah.
Like, so Minecraft and all that other stuff, I don't consider that. Those shouldn't be even be a part of the conversation of why are Microsoft games doing well. I want to see the new titles that have never been on a PlayStation console, or those titles. Those are the ones that are doing well. Is Hi-Fi Rush grounded? Sea of Thieves and that other game that I can't remember the name of that I keep forgetting.
Like, grounded. Are
those games doing well?
Oh, well, we can look that up. I can look at that. Rich, I know you want to say something on this.
Yeah, I have another answer to this question. You asked the question, why are Microsoft games selling well on PlayStation? What the hell else are people going to play on PlayStation? The first party games are not there. They're not there yet. So, yeah, that's the answer.
They're competing against Spider-Man 2 that released, like, last year?
Yes.
Yeah.
So then, Rich, what you're saying is that the PlayStation ain't got no games.
Yes.
I guess we have to say they don't have any first party games. So you I guess you could say Final Fantasy, but I don't think everybody is a Final Fantasy fan. So Stellar Blade, yes, but that's a third party. So the first party support is not there right now for PlayStation.
Okay, yeah,
it's
so
it's a first party published, but not, you know, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the list here, no. The same one we use on the Thursday show. So there are seven games on this a list of the top 25 selling games PlayStation. So seven games are, you know, Microsoft owned and five are Sony owned. But let's just put Manny's filter on there, right? Let's remove some of these games. So if we remove some games, we have to remove Call of Duty. We have to remove Overwatch. We have to remove Fallout 4. We have to remove Minecraft. Have to remove Fallout 76. So if that's the case, there are only two Microsoft developed games on here: Sea of Thieves and Grounded, versus five Sony developed ones. Very interesting.
So I would say that this would hold more weight if all the titles that have that, like, in other words, let's say a sequel to, you know, obviously the sequel to Senua's Sacrifice, if that launched on there, if what's the space game that Bethesda did again?
Starfield.
Well, that's not on there.
Yeah, well, you know, that's not available yet. But maybe that Insider is going to be right.
It's not available yet. But I'm saying if that does show up on there,
yeah,
and that's our sale, I feel like those are the points when we're saying, why are these Xbox games all selling well? It's like, okay, now we can have that conversation. When you look at it, when you remove everything that had already been sitting there before the acquisition, right?
Yeah.
Push them off the table. You only left with two actual games that were not on PlayStation, and they came out, you know, within this last year.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. All right, anybody else have anything else to say about that? All right, I'm gonna take that as a no. So one, who is this guy? Romudeath, man. He's asking a question this week.
Oh,
matter of fact, it's a question for Brett
Murdoch.
So Brett, if you're around, Mr. Romudeath has a question for you specifically.
What's up?
Yeah. But this could apply to Carlos too. If Brett has seen it, what does he think of the Fallout TV series? Is it as great as Adam claims? Does it capture the spirit of the video games? Very good question there.
Okay. I haven't gotten a chance to sit down and watch as much as I'd like. But I did do a bit of a deep dive into it because I didn't get a lot of a chance to. So, short answer or long answer is I'll report back with a more in-depth analysis after I finish the season. Short answer is it catches the vibe. So I think that's really all that matters. I think the biggest problem with Fallout that a lot of people would tell you is the kind of dark humor, the very, very, very dark humor. And the show definitely, it definitely catches the tone, which is an important thing. There's some canon stuff that makes, like, I don't know if this undoes New Vegas or not,
to be 100% on. I'll really know if it does. And that's, people have very strong feelings about New Vegas. But one of the big things I'm finding is, like, a lot of the issues that I think a lot of people have are the New Vegas crowd. New Vegas crowd are known within the fandom to be a little bit particular. So, all in all, it seems pretty good. And I mean pretty good, like, in the normal sense, not the, like, pretty good for what it is. Not, you know, it's not like being like, One Piece is a great live-action adaptation, you know, as far as anime live-action adaptations go, because the 95% of the time they're awful. I'd be like, that was a great game for being a movie tie-in video game. That's not what I mean. I mean, it just seems like it seems like a pretty good show, like, just in general. And, you know, in a world where Lord of the Rings has been fucked up beyond recognition, like, that's kind of a big win. This show makes me feel bad for the people who were excited for Halo.
Yeah, that show got fucked up, you know?
Yeah, so, like, I mean, I don't know where you judge the context. Like, I kind of feel like, to an extent, any more than this is just asking for the Fallout show that was in our heads and in our hearts. And, like, you never get that. You know what I mean? Like, you never get that. And it was never going to be that, because that shit's impossible.
Yeah, but, okay, so I guess you could give us a better, like, fuller answer later. But, yeah, because I want to see if, because, again, Adam thinks it's the fucking greatest show he's seen in years, you know? And he said that he was blessed to have lived to have seen it. Which is very interesting. You know,
I don't get it. I'm having trouble thinking of, like, any shows that I might have been like. And I mean, I live in an age of media where everything has betrayed me. So until they have cut production, I'm going to have trouble saying that. Like, I even had trouble saying, like, this last, not this last run of Castlevania, the previous series. I had trouble saying that was a great series until it had run its conclusion. Then I could look back on it and be like, wow, man, they crossed the finish line without fucking it up. And that says a lot. I know even in that, though, that they wanted to do more in the last season. So, like, you could say in some ways that show is a critical success, and in some ways you could say that show is kind of still a bit of a failure. Like, there is no 100%, I don't think. I think the best you get is 90, and I think 90 is in that instance pretty much a perfect grade. You know what I mean?
Hey, Brett, now you understand where I come from, where I don't give games, like, a perfect score.
But that's where we differ, is because I'm like, 90 is functionally the highest score that you can give it. So that's, if I were to put it, like, in that, the equivalent to stars, I would say 90% is a 10 out of 10 stars. I know that doesn't make sense, and I know that everybody...
I think you heard my brain just go... That's what
it's right. It's like, it only does that if you're trying to make nice round percentages work. I think 10 stars is the maximum a game can be. 90% perfect is the maximum amount of perfection you could expect from something. And so, therefore, those two scores should align. And I know that that's just a preference thing. Because otherwise, just saying nothing ever gets 10 stars, that just feels also equally counterintuitive to me.
I'll say at least understand the spirit of what you're saying. I'll go with that. I don't agree with it, but I understand the spirit of it.
Yeah, same, which is why it's you know, to, good stuff. I think when you get in there, it has to be, you know, if you are really getting down to why did this score have a 9 instead of a 10 or vice versa, you need to really understand the person that you would be talking to and or getting a review from. Because I feel like that's a lot of, like, people just come in and be like, Tony, why don't you give anything a 10? Like, if you're going to argue that one point infinitesimal difference, then, like, you need to know where Tony's coming from. But either way, you should know that if something's getting, you know, if you were arguing about something, if something gets a 9 or a 10, it's a good game. Go play it.
Yeah, pretty much. Brett, I think you know this, like, my, you know, longtime followers, they call, a 4.5 out of 5 or a 90, a Tony perfect.
And that is so appropriate. And I think that's great. Like, that's it. And I think there should be wiggle room, not only between, like, publications, but you know, between reviewers. And I think that one, you know, if you're not given that one point wiggle room and where you kind of understand, and you should be following people whom you agree with, whom you know, look for and value the same things that you like that you do. That is the new age of games journalism, or at least people who manage to look at things objectively and try and give an unbiased score. Like, you're going to have to be familiar with your reviewer. It's no longer the days where you can just look at a publication and be like, yep, them. They got you. No. Unless they're smaller, kind of mid you know, line.
No, you're 100% right, you know. And I'm very humbled by the fact that I've had people this week tell me, Tony, your Stellar Blade review is the only one I'm going to read. I'm like, that's very cool, man. I appreciate that level of trust, you know.
Well, I mean, when you find somebody whose views align with yours, then that's really, that's all you need.
Yeah. But I've also had the opposite, which I'm also appreciative of. There are some people, you know, and they're not doing this as a joke. They're being legit. It's like, Tony, I know if you don't like a game, I will like it. I'm like, hey, that helps. That helps. I've done my job, you know, so yeah. I'm happy with that, you know?
Yeah. I'm one of those people.
Yeah. See, there you go. If I don't like a game, you know, you probably will like it. Actually, not really, because you're a weird one, Brett. You know?
Dude, and I've only gotten weirder. Like,
yes, you have.
I have heard the siren song of Brian's camp, and I will tell you, that is where truth lies.
Yeah, you have gotten, because I can't talk about this on here, but there's a certain game I'm like, oh, like, I don't know if Brett will like this, even though it 5 years ago I would have said yes, but now you're different. You know?
I have really learned I've come to kind of realize, I think it's gaming that's changed. Like, I think one of the core fundamental principles that I need in gaming and that has really changed around me is the idea of freedom. You know, part of the idea of gaming is supposed to be freedom of choice, freedom of action, freedom of thought, freedom of all of these things. And games don't really give you a lot of freedom these days. And that's bothering me. And so I went off looking for the games that do.
Yeah, that's fair. Oh, by the way, man, because again, I keep forgetting we're on YouTube as well. I got to give a shout out to some of the people who threw some money at us. Lotus of Spirit, thank you for the $5. Appreciate that. Thank you. And right now, I got to give a shout out to Black Metal Gamer, who says, freeloader pass only damaged the gaming industry. Damn. God, that's game. That's his name for Game Pass. That's brutal. Anyway, Carlos, I think you may have seen Fallout, or at least one episode. What did you think of it?
Indeed, I have watched only one episode of Fallout, the TV show. So I can't quite say that it's the greatest show I've ever seen, or that I'm glad to be alive to see it. But what I will say is, I agree with Brett that this show does. I mean, at least from the beginning, it does keep its really dark humor. It's really brutal. Like. One of the things that I was worried about is actually the beginning. I was worried about, how does it start? You know, Fallout 3 is probably one of the best ways that you can start it, like the way it starts. And you know, once you get out of the Fallout shelter, and then, you know, you go to see this one, and they did a great job at doing that. There's one thing that I'm kind of worried about. I can't really talk about, but we'll see. We'll see how it how it goes. I mean, I understand why it's there, but we'll see how it goes on throughout the rest of the season. But as far as just the first episode, I was pretty impressed. I mean, the quality is there, the dark humor, the gruesomeness, the violence, it's all there. So, yeah. Great start.
I like that you said that, because to me that is kind of important for Fallout, leaving the vault for the first time. Like, that's cool that the show captured that.
And they did not skimp out on 1940s music.
50s music. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you're right.
It is kind of the same, because if there's some 1930s stuff in there too, that's good to know. Because you know, again, I haven't seen the show. I'm not really interested. But my worry was that it looked like kiddie Fallout. I'm glad that it's brutal. That's good. That's good to know.
Well, and it's not only that. One of the things I really liked about it, so I'm trying to think of how to say this nicely so that people know this on there. I'm like, the vault that is in Fallout. Okay. So you may have noticed on the previews that you're like, this seems kind of like almost over the top, like, I giddy or partially like everybody feels weirdly naive. Like that's intentionally on purpose and has to do with the specs of the vault that they're in. How does anybody who's familiar with vault tech and like their history will be able to kind of pick it up from there. But like everything's intentional. That's what I'll say. It's all intentional. And that kind of plays beautifully and lets them like play an angle with the vault that I don't know how to say other than it works because of vault tech. Does that make any sense?
I think I know what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it only makes sense if you played the games. Like,
yeah,
I know what you're saying, but I don't think a lot of people.
And that's why I'm like, I'm trying not to spoil it because I don't know how much background they eventually give about, like, I don't know if they close that loop or if you have to have played the games by the time the series is done.
Yeah.
Right. Well, a good show should be encapsulated, right?
Yeah.
It shouldn't require you to go get ancillary material. If you're just a normie dude, you don't play games. You're just like, oh, Amazon got this new show, Fallout. Okay, I'm going to watch it. He knows nothing about the games. That show should tell him everything about that world, right? You shouldn't have to go play 3 or 4 New Vegas or whatever. You shouldn't have to do that. Or 76.
Apparently New Vegas.
New Vegas is out? Okay. They're like, all right, that's out. So you don't have to play any of the games. But a good show, I'm saying, you know, it shouldn't require you to read a novel or anything. It should be on its own.
It, like everything you need to understand should be in the show. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the beginning, the first episode, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, you don't really need any extra lore to sort of, I guess, understand what the hell's going on. So it makes sense.
Well, like you don't know that the vaults are every vault is different, but you don't need to know because that's irrelevant information. It just kind of it's. I'm not sure if it's a convenient excuse or if it's clever contrivance or if is there really a difference when it comes. I don't know.
Yeah, I
don't think that they very clearly want like. This is how Vault-Tec is, and this is their grand scheme, and like the way they do it. But like, I don't know if they're going to circle back to it, and I don't know if they need to enjoy what was there. And like, I think that's, you know, also a sign of good writing is you give people enough backstory to enjoy what's there, but then you kind of leave some questions to be answered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, but as a straight up story, it makes sense. Like Brett mentioned, I mean, you can dig deep into the lore and to the expanded universe and get more out of it. But as far as, you know, enjoying the show so far, I don't think you need any of that to enjoy it.
Although they must be doing something right because it's selling games.
Yeah.
Like maybe that's working. But it put the games back in the zeitgeist. So they're doing something right.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not. You didn't see Halo sales boost after the TV show. You know, I'm telling you.
What do you need? I mean, well, there's Game Pass, so it's kind of hard.
You didn't see those subs go up, though, you know?
That's true.
Kiss Shack, what's going on, brother? He goes, I enjoy the show's story much more than Fallout 4. I mean, Fallout 4 got criticism, so I kind of don't blame you, you know?
Yeah.
That's good to know, though. You know, it's like, because there's so many properties that come out now, it's all butchered and fucked up, you know? And I also heard the show doesn't espouse the message, so that's pretty good, you know? Like, when I heard that, I'm like, okay.
I'm curious as to that comment. Like, are you including that like just the main story narrative or the character stories as well? Because like,
from what I heard, the character doesn't have a lot of the tropes. I'm trying to be skirted around it. We can talk about it off air, but apparently,
no. Yeah. I mean, like, I think that the show relies on its characters more than just kind of the main technical narrative, like. But I think the games do too. Like, I think a lot of people look at the games and kind of be like, the main story ain't that great. Like, yeah, the main story is the main story, but you're also kind of supposed to be playing, you know, all of these companion stories as kind of B tier, you know, B stories along with it. So it's, I think in a good Bethesda game, you're juggling main story with other stuff, and that should play out like a prime storyline in a movie along with multiple B plots that are kind of like surfacing and going back under. So I don't know that you can view a Fallout game, you know, away from its character stories and like the, you know, like the stories of your companions are some of the best fucking stories of the game. So yeah,
Just, yeah, you know. So it was in that context. It was about the characters. It was about the characters. So that's good to know. You know, it's like, just tell a good story, guys. Tell good characters. Build good characters. That's all you need. Not that difficult. People used to do it before.
Yeah, but I mean, you've seen stories though that are like,
yeah,
the storyline, the main plot line is fucking terrible. But there's like 5 or 7 great characters that all have great personal storylines. You're like, I don't give a shit what's going on in their main story. Like, Walking Dead was that. Like, what was going on in the main storyline? Fucking nothing.
Well, never, yeah, just anything. Survive. Just survive. That's it. You know?
But then the characters had good stories. So you're like, okay, but I'll go with it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with a simple story with great characters, because it doesn't often work the other way around. You notice that, right? Sometimes you have a super ultra complex story that's like really involved, but if the characters suck, no one cares. You know, that's usually how it goes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Kishak, simple plot, complex characters is where the good shit is at. There you go. All right. And the last question of the night, this one is a question from last week that none of us could answer because Brett and Brian weren't on. So you guys are on, so you'll be able to answer this. This is from Alpha Chuck. I'll repeat my question from last week if Brian and Brett are on tonight. They are both on tonight. What is your excitement level, if it exists, for the planned Shattered Space Starfield DLC? How much of an overhaul would it take to get you back into the world? And he says about himself, after putting in 100 hours after launch last year, I would need a pretty significant amount of content to get me back. So, yeah, Brett, are you excited about the Starfield DLC?
Not especially. Uh-oh. No, I mean, I want to be. It's that game went too many different directions, and like, I think that, and I could be wrong, because I think deep down, I think that there's a core of good there. I think that, for instance, when you're playing Fallout, you go through so many doors that are actually loading screens that, you know, you're not walking from one end of the world to another. You actually, unless you're just walking from one end to another outside in the big overworld, you're going through several checkpoints to, like, you know, go into town and, you know, the door that has a fade to black. So, like, I think that there's a lot of smoke and mirrors that make you feel like it's one continuous experience. And I even played Starfield in a way that made it, like, if you walk through doors, walk into your ship, climb the ladder, go to the star map, chart your path, walk to your seat, sit down, fly, like, fucking faster than light travel, and then kind of do all of those steps backwards again. It honestly, it does feel really cohesive. It does feel like you've gotten on a big horse of sorts and you've just kind of flown across space and you're now getting back out. Like, that part feels cohesive. So I feel like you could rebuild that, and you could, in theory, add a lot of permanent hand-built outposts and things like that to different places, or do a better job at randomizing and expand that. There are ways to make the whole thing feel bigger and more cohesive and have more rewards when you get there. The question is that juice really worth the squeeze? And is that the amount of effort they're going to put into it? Or are they going to give you something else that's significantly less than that? I feel the juice ain't worth the squeeze. I think it would take an immense amount of work to make that game work. Mostly because there's a foundational issue with the kind of the traveling by space travel is broken apart. Bethesda games work best when they are large and one piece. And those two don't, like, it's really tough finding a sweet spot where they come together. And even if you do, I don't know that it's going to work as well as wandering across an entire wasteland or wandering across Tamriel and Elder Scrolls. Like, there's a reason those experiences work really well, and I'm not sure breaking them up in any way kind of really does a whole lot of justice. And you can smoke and mirror, sew them back up together, but I don't know if it's really ever going to feel like Fallout. The same way I'm not sure Fallout would feel like Fallout if you had vehicles, or even kind of horses for that matter. Like, I'm not, if you shrunk the world too much or made it too convenient or made it more about something else. Like, if you're like, oh, here's a Fallout game, but you're on a train going through New California, and, you know, you stop at a town and you get back on a town, and you know, you solve a mystery and then you stop at the next town and you talk to its people. It's Fallout. And I'm like, that doesn't feel like Fallout. That just feels like visiting a bunch of Fallout towns via train, like some kind of Animal Crossing fucking hybrid. So I think there's some things that make a Bethesda game what it is. And I don't think 100% of those things line up with what makes Starfield. So you could make good DLC. Is it going to rebirth Starfield in the fires of Bethesda to make it the game that quote unquote just works? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think that there is going to that place. I think you guys went the opposite direction that Baldur's Gate did, in that Baldur's Gate wanted to make things so saturated and so on top of another that you couldn't help but stumble over secret after secret and have a hard time deciding which path you're going to go down, because both of them have so many great things. And you, Bethesda, went the polar opposite direction. And I don't think that it's any coincidence that Baldur's Gate just swept every major game of the year to be the first in history to catch all five, whereas Starfield is languishing in the memory of becoming nothingness. So I'll let you guess which one worked better.
So I'm going to guess, yeah, you're not excited about the DLC.
If you could make every city neon, maybe. If you could put that much like compact stuff, sure. If you could make it worth going out into the middle of the fucking desert, sure. But right now, it feels like more like it feels like an adventure oriented mission. It feels like I am in space, but not I'm wandering space. Like I'm doing things off a checklist, because the only reason to do stuff is to, like, have a reason to go to point A to point B, and then back to point A, and then to point C, is to know your reason for going there. So would it work well as, like, a space delivery simulator type game, right? Sure. A space pirate type game. Yeah, okay, maybe. Like, a Planet Express type thing. Yeah, fuck yeah. But, like, as a wander around and get engrossed in a big world, like, it's space is too barren. Real life space is too barren. Don't do that in real life space. There's not enough shit.
Fair enough. Brian, what do you think, man? Are you excited for the DLC?
Not particularly. But then again, I've just kind of had my fill with the Starfield world. I don't think there's anything that would get me to go back. I'm kind of on the opposite end of other people's opinions with some things with Starfield. So to me, it just sounds funny, but it felt like Fallout in space. And if people liked that type of stuff, that's fine. But I was looking more for a space game rather than a Fallout game with a space overlay. So yeah, I think I'm all right. And I already had the feeling that Fallout was just Skyrim with guns. So it's kind of like, it's like a second-hand version of Skyrim in space. So it's like, yeah, I played this game, what, now 13 years ago, you know, when Skyrim first came out. So it's like, no, I'm good, you know. So yeah, nothing that can get me back. I did like how they handled New Game Plus and all the things that can change with New Game Plus. I thought that's a cool idea. But everything else around that, it's just not enough for me. And I don't know enough about the details of this DLC and what that might entail. But honestly, unless they radically change the game, I have no interest to go back for any reason. And Brett summed up most of my ideas and how I felt about the game.
Yeah, I want to read some comments here because they kind of agree with you guys. Kishak says, Bethesda is usually good at their DLC expansions. Anybody remember the Shivering Isles and Point Lookout? Yeah, the DLCs are good, but you know they need to kind of fundamentally change the mechanics or whatever. Jay Shep goes, I really wanted to like Starfield. It started out really interesting, but got really boring really quickly. The loading, and Kishak replied to that saying multiple loading got me. Jay Shep again says, it ended up being Fallout in space when it should have been Skyrim in space. And then it's a shame that Starfield is filled with outdated game design. So yeah, the chat agrees with you guys as well. Oh, another $2 from Mr. Black Metal Gamer. Games that never got DLC that you wish would get DLC. That's a good question.
Baldur's Gate.
Baldur's Gate. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it is what if you, what if all the things that were going to be in a DLC were actually in a game? I feel like that's what Baldur's Gate is.
I want more DLC. I'll be honest. I would have been okay if Larry and we're just like, we built an amazing system and now we're just going to keep building content for the system in story and theme DLCs that the main game took place in like Baldur's Gate, but like what if they had another DLC that same system, same graphics, new story, new setting. You know, story in Waterdeep, and you're like, oh shit, cool. Yes. Do that every 2 years.
Wouldn't that be there if they decided to just go full on with their other game, that fantasy game?
Their Divinity?
Yeah, what if they just said, all right, we're not going to be doing Baldur's Gate, but, you know, if you really liked that game, we do have a game called Divinity.
That would be great, but like Divinity 1 and 2, they were rebuilt from the ground up with tweaked systems and overhauled graphics and brand new systems, so I would be okay if they did something the level of Baldur's Gate and then just kept making content, because like you don't really like once you've built such a good system, it's almost a shame not to keep just building more content. I realize you're going to need different assets, but like how many different textures for a loaf of bread do you really need? Especially when, you know, Wizards of the Coast are coming out with this fucking garbage version of, you know, a digital D&D playmat that doesn't do half the stuff this video game does. So I could see, you know, like a basket is a goddamn, there's already 26 bad textures for baskets in the game. You don't need more baskets. You could build a new town or a new city and new stories, new voice, new characters. All that's going to cost money. It's going to take time, throw out one of those things every couple of years. Like, you know, almost the way Wizard of the Coast puts out, you know, big, story mods for their D&D. Like, I forget what the last one was. It was the one with Zariel or whatever. But yeah, I would be 100% on board with that. I just want to keep, I'm so upset that there's not more Baldur's Gate, even with as much Baldur's Gate as there is. I just want more. Hmm. And as soon as I finish that, I'm just going to want more. I've got a habit. I've got a problem. And the only solution is more Baldur's Gate. And it's not happening. It makes me sad, but you know, this happened before. This happened with Divinity. It happened with Divinity 2. It's how Baldur's Gate came about. Divinity 3 is going to be absolutely amazing. So it is what it is. I hope they do a whole bunch of DLC content over several years for Divinity 3. Though, fuck yes, please.
Yeah, Kishak goes, I feel better if Larian can do their own IP rather than work on somebody else's.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
What would have been great, though, is if Larian kept getting paid for people building, you know, the same way Wizards of the Coast gets paid when people do stuff in D&D. If Larian kept getting paid every time Wizards of the Coast did, you know, a D&D or a Baldur's Gate expansion, that would have been just so nice to see. But, you know, they're going back to do their own thing. And I love the fact they're going to take their own success and be like, cool, we're going to take all of these fans and just go over here.
And yeah, that pimp shit, man.
Did not go like at all like Baldur's Gate or like Wizards thought that was going to. They thought they were going to put out this game, and all of these Larian fan base would come over to D&D, and instead it went the other way.
Yeah, I'll go down the line here, Manny. What games that never got DLC that you wish got DLC?
I would say The Order's 1886. They did have a DLC, but it had a day one DLC, which is the bane of everyone's existence.
Oh no.
But it was really just costumes and garbage. You know, like some shiny gold guns and stuff like that. Nothing like that. But yeah, I wish they did have another DLC, you know, have something for that game. And I'm sure they did. But, you know, since the reception was so bad on it, they just said, you know what, let's close this one before anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's mine.
For me, it's hard because most of the games I liked did get DLCs in some form. So it's like, because I'm thinking about what games like Mass Effect 2 got DLCs, you know. Actually, you know what? Metal Gear 5 didn't get one, right? I want a DLC with the real ending. There we go. That's my answer. All right, Brett already answered. Brian, what about you? What games that never got DLCs do you wish got DLCs?
A tough one, because most of the ones that I like already have DLC. So yeah. I guess the only answer I can give is Dragon's Dogma 2.
There you go.
It's an answer.
It is an answer.
It's a Tony answer.
Yeah, it's a good answer. It is a good answer.
It's a Tony answer.
Yes. You know,
it answers the question, but doesn't actually answer the question.
Yes. You know, kind of like, actually, no, I did answer, damn it. Carlos, what about you, man? Any games that never got DLCs that you wish did?
I can't really think of one. I mean, Elden Ring was probably the answer, but you got DLC it's coming, announced.
You know,
it's coming this year. I don't know. I don't think I have an answer, because I, you know, usually a lot of games I'm fine with, you know, the way they ended, you know, the ones that I care about. But you know, if some do have DLC, it's like, oh, that's nice. But I'm not really like, oh, I need a DLC for this. I think Elden Ring might be the only exception.
And that's coming, you know. But yeah, and yeah, like I said, in my situation, like most of the games I like have gotten DLCs, if not all of them, you know. Chris, what about you?
The only thing I can think of is Red Dead Redemption 2 and get DLC.
Oh, that's right.
Red Dead Online does not count.
No, and because remember, Red Dead 1 got DLC.
I mean, Undead Nightmare was fantastic. It was a standalone. Yeah. You know, it was so good. So where's that for Red Dead Redemption 2? We didn't get anything like that. I doubt we'll ever get it.
Yeah. I'm guessing, J-Shep, you're talking about Forspoken. No, nobody wants that. Well, the studio doesn't exist anymore, so it doesn't matter, you know?
They got reabsorbed back into Square.
Yeah, right. What about you, Rich? Any games that never got DLC that you wish did?
Well, I believe that Manny mentioned a game by the name of The Order 1886. I wanted them to make another one of those games because they had left so many plot holes in the story that I felt they could have expanded upon. So that's a missed opportunity.
Rich,
but let me just make... Yes, yes.
I would... I mean, the streets would say that The Order 1886 is a DLC to begin with.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was so short. I remember that was the main complaint people had. That's a valid complaint. But let me also make this comment, because I know Carlos said earlier that he didn't really think of any games that deserve DLC. Well, Carlos did tell me in secrecy that he was not satisfied with that Mass Effect DLC that we got, the ending of the game, of the original trilogy. So he said he would love for them to... do it over again and give us a better endings.
Well, yeah, that, I mean, in retrospect, yeah, definitely. But we did get DLC. We got the DLC that gets rid of the colors.
Yeah, exactly. So we did get a better ending thanks to DLC. We did eventually get it. Yeah. You know? Good stuff. All right, man. It's going to do it for us. A full show. You know, that's how we do it on Throwdown, man. Some good stuff here. A couple of things for the plug. On April 24th, 10 a.m. Eastern, Rich and I will be releasing our respective reviews of Stellar Blade. Mine will go up on tomsguide.com. Rich is going to go up on thecoalition.com, coalition with a K. And on the Thursday show, Rich and I will give you an exhaustive review of the game. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be a lot of fun, man. I can't wait to finally share my thoughts with the world, you know. I'm going to write the review probably tomorrow, you know, during work. So it'll be good stuff. And speaking about the coalition, Rich, what else is going on with the coalition? Hold on, man. Yeah, you go after him.
Well, first and foremost, yes, as Tony said, we both are playing Stellar Blade. I believe we can announce that.
Yeah, we can. Sure, but, we're not breaking embargoes, yeah. Unlike some Harry and the Hendersons, you know.
Yeah, so look for that later this week. I also, you know, for I believe it was some people asked in the past, are we ever going to do a Fallout podcast? Well, Danny and Dana actually recorded a spoiler discussion for the entire first season of Fallout, and that's currently on the website right now. Yes, it's on the website right now, thecoalition.com, Coalition with a K. Is also on our YouTube channel, The Coalition Entertainment. So if you do want to hear some more thoughts on the show, I would highly recommend you check out their review. As for... you know, as for other things, we have a couple of other reviews coming. Some thoughts on No Rest for the Wicked. And there's a couple other games dropping next week that I guess people haven't really, they've just completely forgotten about. We'll have something to say about those games also. There you go. Yes, that's one game. That's one game. There's something else dropping a lot sooner that I know Brett would be a huge fan of, but I don't know if Brett's going to have time to play that. But yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah, Manny, what did you want to plug?
No, I was going to say, I was going to ask you, Tony, how was your, you literally had a week off.
Yeah, I did.
That's some crazy shit.
Yeah, vacation. And the ironic thing is, I was sick the whole fucking time. Ain't that something?
What the fuck?
Oh, no.
I got one of those, you know how like some colds, they come in, you know, they come in and just leave right away. This one was like, no, I'm parking here, man. I'm good. Yeah, like I only left the crib one time, you know, to go see Godzilla X Kong. But the rest of the time, like some days were better than others. Like I haven't had a cold this bad in fucking years, man. It was crazy. But I'm better now. I'm in the coughing stage, so that's the end of it. So, but it was good to, you know, have a week off. Gave me plenty of time to play Stellar Blade. And it, by the way, guys, just so you know, unlike most of my reviews, I didn't rush through it. I played it exactly as I normally would, and I beat the game on Thursday. So it was like that. It was good. Like it coincided perfectly, my vacation with the game, even though technically playing the game is for work as well. And I had to, you know, think about it like that, but I didn't have to rush it. So that was nice. But I am looking forward to getting back to work because there's a lot of shit going on this week, as Rich said, not only with gaming, but like tech. So I'm eager for it, man. I've noticed that about myself. Like, I think a week is the most I could take off before I start getting antsy. I'm like, I need to get back in it, man. I need to get back to the grind, you know? Gives you purpose, you know? I want to... comments here. Jay Shep. Manny, this is for you. He goes, I'd like to thank you for gifting me this great autograph set. One of the coolest gifts I've ever gotten. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Good stuff.
Enjoy.
And to the rest of us, he says, you guys at Throwdown are some awesome individuals. Yeah, you guys are awesome, man. Thank you for that.
Yeah, by the way, thank you, Mr. Shep, for all the wonderful games that we have here. Oh,
those will be given away episode 500, yes, people.
Yes, we have a lot of things to give away here, you know.
Yeah.
An unopened Cyberpunk for PlayStation 4, that's some crazy shit.
Upgrade
it
for free.
You can upgrade it for free.
Yep.
You know, what is this? Horizon Zero Dawn. You know, got the Miles Morales game, Civilization for all you civvies out there.
Nice.
So yeah, we got lots of stuff.
Good stuff, man. Yeah, thank you for that. So we'll definitely be giving that stuff away. And that. All right, man. I love how, you know, how many sometimes your camera gets all garbled. Tonight's one of those nights where it's all like, you know, 180p or something. You know.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Can't help that. All right, people, we are done here, so make sure you follow through down on Twitch and Twitter. Join a Discord where the conversations and the rumors are always popping. You could also find us on any podcast app by searching for Throwdown Show. That's two words, Throwdown Show. Throwdownshow.com to listen to past episodes. And obviously, we are back on YouTube. So if you like the videos, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified of when we go live. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight is joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
Peace.
Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good week, everybody.
And Brian Manjoma.
Later, people.
All right, guys. Thursday's going to be a big show. Stellar Blade, get ready. Later.
Peace.
Latest.